Welcome into the Ether, a podcast focusing on all things Ethereum, the leading blockchain for decentralized applications. I'm Eric Connor, your host and founder of ETHub, a decentralized information hub for Ethereum. Into the Ether features deep dives on topics with prominent guests in the community, as well as ETHub weekly recaps featuring Anthony Sassano. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the ETHub Weekly Recap. In these episodes, Anthony and I discuss the ETHub Weekly newsletter, which covers recent events in both the Ethereum ecosystem and crypto space as a whole. Today, we will be discussing the news from February 4th to February 10th. Hey, Anthony, how's it going?
Hey, Eric, I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. Ready to talk about the newsletter.
Yeah, awesome, awesome. So as a first, there's a couple of things I wanted to go through with regards to just ETHub in general. So we launched the redesign of the website this week. I mentioned that in the newsletter. For those who haven't seen it yet, just go to docs.ethub.io and you'll see the redesign. We streamlined a lot of things and made it easier to navigate and a better search feature as well. We're working on some more upgrades, so keep an eye out for that. But we'll definitely update you guys through the newsletter and on Twitter. We've got the CFTC request for input document on ETHub in the other section that is due Feb 15th. So it's a couple of days from when you'll be hearing this podcast. Definitely, if you have anything to add, add it now because we do want to submit it. We think we've got a pretty good document already, but we have had some people call out that it might not be, I guess, legal slash regulatory, you know, slash CFTC enough, whatever, you know. It might be a bit technical for what they're asking, but I still think that we've got a really healthy document. And there were other people in the ecosystem, like the Brooklyn project, that were working on documents as well. So definitely check that out if you haven't, and add anything if you think you can. And we'll submit it on behalf of ETHub and the community in general. And hopefully we see something positive come of that. And the last thing, I'll let you talk about this, Eric, was the XDAI Twitter bot that you were looking for someone to build.
Yeah, definitely. So there's a lot of talk this week about XDAI and the Austin Griffiths burner wallet and how that all works. So I think a lot of people had the idea, but I got kind of motivated about the idea of having some kind of Twitter bot where essentially XDAI is a POA network sidechain for Ethereum where you can send DAI for pretty much absolutely no fee. I call it micro fee. And the block time is very fast, like 5 seconds or so. And Austin Griffith has created this great wallet called the Burner Wallet that you can send DAI back and forth to people really easily. And I was kind of giving away some DAI on Twitter for people to kind of mess around with. It's really, really cool technology. But I think some kind of tip Twitter bot where you could just say, you know, tie an address to it and say, hey, I really like this comment. I want to send them one XDAI, $1 worth, and type that in, send it would be really cool. So I was kind of asking if anybody's interested in doing this, I'm willing to throw a bounty on it and die. I have a couple bites on Twitter at the moment, nothing too serious. Just kind of think we could get a good team together for this though, for people that are interested so far. So just reach out to me on Twitter if that's something that interests you.
Yep, cool. Sounds awesome. So, anyone who's interested, yeah, just reach out to Eric or you can reach out to me or whoever. Join the ETHub Discord if you haven't already. We're always active in there and it's easy to reach us there as well. Just tag us, basically. Cool. So now we can move on to the news. Biggest news of the week. Abra, the kind of the crypto wallet trading kind of platform that I hadn't really heard about too much of before, but they've been around for a while. But basically this week they announced that they're going to let their users invest in stocks and ETFs with their cryptocurrency. They claim to be using the Bitcoin blockchain to record the ownership of these sorts of things, which I found quite surprising considering Bitcoin's quite limited in its functionality and what it can do at the base layer. Another thing that I kind of thought of when I saw this announcement was the regulations and legalities around this, because we've seen over the last few months a lot of people trying to tokenize stocks and things like this, getting the ETFs through and all that sort of stuff. But it's interesting to see that Abra was able to launch this, and I did see some comments on a few articles that I read about how they might be expecting a letter from the SEC and CFTC, considering that the product that they're offering, which is called CFDs, which I'll let Eric explain through, but CFDs are actually banned in America, and Abra is claiming to allow people in 155 countries to use this platform. But over to you, Eric, and I'll let you explain what CFDs are and what's actually going on in the back end here.
Yeah, I mean, this is obviously, when I first read this, surprising, I guess. And then as you kind of dig a bit deeper into it, you know, doesn't, what actually is happening behind the scenes isn't what's made out to be. So basically, you're not actually buying ownership in these stocks from Abra, at least from what I can understand in diving into this. You're actually kind of just buying what seem to be contracts for difference. So that's essentially kind of a contract between two parties. So essentially, let's just imagine, Anthony, you and I are on this platform and I want a long Apple stock at 140. And you're like, oh, well, you know, I actually want a short Apple stock right now at 140. We would just enter an agreement that says, hey, within, you know, 6 months, let's revisit this. If Apple stock's at 135, I owe you $5. So we're not actually trading Apple stock. Like, we don't actually, I don't own it and you're not buying it to sell it, to short it. That seems to be what's happening here. There's no actual ownership and transfer of stocks. I guess that's how they're thinking about getting around it. But as you mentioned, last I checked, at least CFD trading for U.S. equities in America is definitely not something that the SEC and CFTC would smile about. So I'm sure they're going to be getting some kind of letter or knock on the door soon. But it seems, yeah, they're just taking people's Bitcoin in. I'm not really sure how they're matching the two parties up per se, because you kind of need both sides of the trade. I don't know if they're taking some counterparty risk on their side to just take whatever bet the other side of the bet that people want to take, but definitely something to keep an eye on. I can't imagine this lasts a very long time, in all honesty.
Yeah, when you explained to me what CFDs were, you know, I'm pretty noob to the finance side of things within crypto, as I have a technical background. But when you explained the CFDs to me, I was like, oh, okay. So it's just like any other thing in crypto these days, where on the surface it's amazing, but when you start, you know, looking behind the curtain, there's all kinds of weird stuff going on to get around various regulations. And to be fair, it's not really the fault of these platforms, you know, totally the fault of these platforms, because there isn't actually clear guidelines with regards to regulation around cryptocurrency or anything like that. And it's very slow to move. We know, we've seen the drama with the ETF, with ICOs and what constitutes a security, what doesn't, and all this kind of drama. And it's just, there's been no clarity outside of some of the commissioners at the SEC or members of the SEC saying in a personal capacity that they don't believe that ICO tokens are securities, but that's where it kind of stops. You know, the biggest statement was obviously the SEC chairman saying he doesn't consider Ether a security because the Ethereum network is sufficiently decentralized. But outside of that, there hasn't been much movement there that I've seen, but I'm sure there's a lot of movement in the background. It just takes a while.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about the benefits of tokenizing stock trading, right? You can trade fractional shares, which, you know, a price of Amazon stock might be $1,500 at some point or whatever, and people don't want to buy a full share. You can trade 24/7. You could hopefully kind of reach the entire world with these tokenized stock shares. So, you know, I really hope that regulators take to this at a point, even if they just allow, you know, the exchanges themselves, like say a NASDAQ, to release these, or whoever, TD Ameritrade or E-Trade, however it works. I really hope we see this come to fruition, because I think it's an obvious benefit that blockchain can add to stock trading.
Yeah, I agree. We talk about it a lot, and I hope that we get to see this in some kind of official, non-dodgy, non-shady capacity sometime into the future. So the next bit of news that I wanted to touch on was the Zcash inflation vulnerability that was disclosed this week by the Zcash team. Now, this vulnerability was actually found last March by the team, and it was patched in the subsequent Sapling update for Zcash that went live, I think it was September or October of 2018. And basically, this vulnerability allowed the printing or minting of you know, unlimited coins. And this is a particularly bad vulnerability in general for blockchains. We've seen Bitcoin have one recently as well. They usually refer to as inflation bugs or inflation exploits. But with a privacy coin such as Zcash, what could have actually happened if it was exploited, and the Zcash team are confident that it hasn't been exploited, but if it was exploited, while the Zcash is in shielded addresses, so the private addresses on the Zcash chain, someone could potentially mint unlimited coins, and you wouldn't actually be able to verify that due to the fact that Zcash runs on zero knowledge proofs. So there's a lot of technical stuff in the background there, but it did bring up a lot of kind of thoughts in my mind around, like, Eric, we talk about it a lot, but layer one privacy and the best way to approach this, because you know, as I said, these bugs on these layer one private chains are particularly damaging because of the fact that you can't verify the money supply and can't verify if they've been exploited 100% and be 100% confident about it. So, you know, it kind of swayed my opinion. Like, I'm all for privacy on layer one, but maybe we need to do it in such a way where it doesn't break the guarantees of being able to verify the circulating monetary supply.
Yeah, I mean, this is really interesting one, basically, because of what you said is what I was thinking about when this happened. So I guess first, we kind of saw a potential inflation bug in Bitcoin, like you mentioned. It wasn't exploited, but if it would have been, that would have been to the Bitcoin protocol a bit of a disaster, which would have had to cause a fork to fix that and all that good stuff. And now we have it on Zcash as well. You bring up a really good point, though, and you know, I harp a lot on we need privacy, but maybe there is kind of a fine line here. We've seen Aztec Protocol put out an EIP for zero-knowledge ERC-20 tokens, which means that the ERC-20 token standard would be private, or at least there'd be a new implementation of it that would be private. Maybe that's kind of the way to go, like kind of leave the base layer. Essentially, it'd be an opt-in privacy. So if we have zero-knowledge ERC-20s as a user, if you wanted to convert your ETH, right now you can convert it into wrapped ETH, you can convert it into any other ERC-20 token. You could then take your ETH and wrap it into the ZK wrapped ETH, right? And all of a sudden you're kind of have private transactions happening. Potentially that's the way to go, to not even be able to discover bugs and like what the actual supply is a problem. So maybe there is kind of a fine line between finding privacy on the layer one area versus kind of an opt-in privacy solution.
I think that definitely is, that fine line that we need to tread and decide what the best implementations are. I'm not an expert on the privacy protocols or technologies that are being developed. I know Vitalik is very keen on ZK Starks and things like that. I'm not sure if, they could be used in a way where it wouldn't break the verification of the monetary supply on the base layer. But I do think the temporary implementations of wrapping, like you mentioned, wrapping it into a private implementation of ERC-20, for example, would be fine because you're basically wrapping the supply that's already been verified. So if you're wrapping 10 ETH, you know that 10 ETH had to come from the protocol itself, and it's wrapped. And then while it's wrapped, it's like any other token, but with privacy guarantees layered on top. So you'd still be able to verify that 10 ETH is just 10 ETH and hasn't been more haven't been printed. But it'll be I'm very curious to see how this evolves over time. I don't think we're going to have privacy at layer one, like built into the protocol in the form of Starks for quite a while still, not until deep into ETH 2.0 anyway. I think last time I checked, it was part of maybe the end phases of ETH 2.0 or even potentially ETH 3.0, which is literally just some random ideas bouncing around on Reddit, GitHub, and stuff like that at the moment. So in the meantime, we're going to have these layer two, smart contract based as well solutions that will bring privacy. And that obviously won't break the monetary supply either, or it shouldn't. I mean, maybe it's not obvious, but it definitely shouldn't, I wouldn't think.
I mean, I think we need to just, we don't need to go to a full extreme on privacy. We just need the option, like you said, like to be able to just wrap it, have some privacy there and maybe back out. I mean, in all honesty, I just want an ability to have a wallet that I can send XDAI to people on Twitter from and not worry about doxing myself. Just simple stuff like that.
Yeah, I don't want to have to wash one of my wallets through an exchange every time that I want to do something, you know, with ETH, with the Ethereum network. That happens way too often. Cool. So the next thing I wanted to talk about was the awesome kind of document that Amin Soleimani put out with regards to ETH 2.0. So it's titled The State of Ethereum 2.0. And it basically is a document that was put together by Amin and a few others where they interviewed various ETH 2.0 implementers as well as researchers and kind of looked at the pain points of what's happening in ETH 2.0, the status of the team, the development status, you know, what the roadmap looks like, what these teams are struggling with. And you know, as we're well aware and as we've been, you know, tooting the horn of in the community, funding is definitely a pain point for these teams, especially the bigger teams. But I think these teams will be getting more funding as testnets go live. I've seen a bit of chatter of that around, and I don't think it's going to be too much of a concern going forward. There's also Moloch DAO, Gitcoin grants. There's various funding initiatives being set up to fund these teams and make sure that we can get to ETH 2.0, because there are at the moment 9 or 10, I think, ETH 2.0 implementation teams or building different clients. If we talk about the ones that are doing it kind of full time, there's a handful. And I actually made a funding table for ETH Hub where it breaks down how much funding each of these teams has and who they're funded by. So obviously the lead team being Prismatic Labs, they're funded really by different funds in the ecosystem. Even the smaller ones like the Aragon Nest Fund, the Ethereum Community Fund, and the EF, the Ethereum Foundation, of course. So, and a few of the other teams is you know, different donations, Ethereum Foundation, Parity Building, the client is, of course, funded by Parity Technologies, as well as the recent $5 million grant they got. So that was the biggest pain point. And he also discussed things like no definitive lead for ETH 2.0, which I think was a bit immature to say, considering that there's kind of de facto leads at the moment in Justin Drake, Danny Ryan, and Xiao Wang. Those three at the Ethereum Foundation have basically taken on the form of leads / project managers for ETH 2.0 and are managing the rollout. And it's actually quite a big job. So kudos to them. They're across everything ETH 2.0 from what I've seen. So I don't think that's too much of a concern going forward. And there is a tweet that from Danny Ryan that I wanted to talk about later, but we'll leave that for later in the podcast. And then the last thing, big thing that this document touched on was that the narrative for ETH 2.0 and Ethereum in general is controlled by people outside of the Ethereum community. And we see this a lot on Twitter, of course. There's a lot of Bitcoiners, you know, with large followings, just spreading tons of misinformation and tons of, you know, crap narratives around Ethereum that don't make any sense, that aren't based in truth. And people just gobble it up because these people have large followings and, you know, they're a lot of the time they're Bitcoin maximalists. So people already think Ethereum is a scam or whatever. And it's unfortunate because there's no loud voices in Ethereum like that, that can fight back against it. We do our best on Twitter, but we're small fish in a pretty big pond. So it's good that he called that out. And I hope that more of the, you know, I guess more involved people within the Ethereum community, especially core devs and researchers, start fighting back a bit on Twitter and clarifying things. I mean, that's why we've got ETH Hub as well at the end of the day. So yeah, it was good to see that get called out.
Yeah, this was a good report. I guess this is the second straight week we've talked about Amin putting out a lot of good stuff, in my opinion. Definitely worth an obvious follow on Twitter. And he posts a lot on Reddit, at least he used to. I don't hang out on Reddit as much as I used to. But anyways, yeah, I guess first and foremost is the funding of ETH 2.0 teams. We've got, I think we're up to 9 teams now. I should fact check that on ETH Hub because we have a pretty sweet page with all the teams and what language they're writing there. Clients in, and then you had put up a really good page about their funding as well. And you know, I actually think at this point we have a decent amount of funding on the ETH 2.0 teams. I know it's kind of like if we don't get this done, our funding is going to run out kind of mentality, but you know, 3 or 4 of the teams I believe have at least $1 million or more in funding, or they're funded by someone like Consensus, which obviously has a lot of money. It seems like the grants program is kind of starting to take an approach of milestone funding. So we saw that with the Parity funding, kind of, you know, if you hit here, you get some more, if you hit this, you get some more. And I think that's the right way to go about it. I think people need to back off a little bit on the grants program. I think it's actually proving its worth pretty strongly recently. We've seen a lot of good things come out of it. A lot of good plasma research lately being dropped by LeapDAO. Uniswap came out of it, obviously, like Pry Labs and a lot of the ETH 2.0 teams coming out of it. We're definitely having a lot better hit rate than ICOs, which I guess is no surprise, because if you give someone $100 million up front before they have to create a product, obviously they're not going to deliver, because, you know, why would you? You can go on your private jet and take a couple trips around the world over the next few years before you have to deliver a product. But I will say, I hope that the community continues to fund these teams. It seems like Gitcoin grants is starting to pick up some steam, and I think they're still matching contributions for the next couple of days. So if you haven't gone on GitHub grants to fund some of the ETH 2.0 teams, and there's a lot of other stuff out there. I just personally went through another round of funding, threw some money at some of my favorite projects that are on there, and definitely highly recommend that people do that. And it looks like the community is starting to step up a pretty good amount. I noticed a lot of the teams have hit their funding goals in the first month, which is great to see. But yeah, on the funding side, hopefully, you know, I think we're at least, it seems like we're funded enough to get through maybe phase 2 or so. And then as we hit that, I think some of these teams will see more money kind of put their way. agreed with you. We'll talk a little bit later about the E2.0 leads, but it seems like some people are stepping up into these roles and kind of taking these lead roles on, even though they didn't necessarily ask for it. But it seems like the teams and communities are rallying around certain people, which is good to see, because I'm a very strong believer in, you know, we can have a decentralized network, but decentralized software development does not work. So you have to have some leaders step up and kind of take those roles in order to actually hit milestones and releases. And then finally, agree with you, the narrative is pretty much controlled at this point outside of the group working. And that's pretty much because the group that's building E2.0 has their heads down and are too worried about putting up the fight for what they have to say. And I think that's kind of up to us and ETHUB, people like us, at least, who are kind of champions for the products that are being built, but might not necessarily have the skill set to help contribute to them directly, to kind of help control that narrative. But, you know, I think as we start to deliver and we see test sets come online, that narrative is going to shift back to the teams that are building E2.0.
Yeah, it's funny to talk about the narratives, because these narratives, they just change so often. Like, and it goes through waves as well. Like, we saw a few weeks ago people talking about, oh, no one can run an Ethereum full node, like on Twitter and things like that. And, you know, we created a page for it. We got all the facts together. We started putting that out there. And I think as soon as there were actual facts presented to people, they just kind of cowered and were like, oh shit, we can't actually, you know, talk about this stuff anymore, can't spread this bullshit anymore because it's not actually true. Or maybe they just got over it. It's just funny. It reminds me a lot of just high school drama, where people would just start something for a couple weeks and then they'll just forget about it because it's not important anymore to them, or, you know, it's not popular to talk about it. And I think that's what happens a lot in crypto, not just with Ethereum, but with everything. Like, we see everything go through waves. Like, when EOS launched, it was really fun to hate on EOS and everything. And of course, we did it ourselves. And, you know, I'm not defending EOS at all, because I still think it's trash, if I'm being honest. But, you know, it always happens that way. And that's obviously not exclusive to crypto at all. Like, it's just the way humans work. We love to latch onto narratives and we get bored, and then we latch onto new narratives. So I think it's good to keep an open mind and keep your kind of wits about you when you see things being spread on Twitter. If it actually only lasts like a week or a couple of weeks, then you know that it's just like, what's the term I'm looking for? Like a flavor of the week, if you will. And we saw this a lot in 2017 in the bull market. There was flavor of the week coins, where one coin would keep getting shilled on Reddit and Twitter, and then it would just die off because people were just trying to pump the price. So I think it's very important to keep that in mind when looking at these narratives. And also, if you're looking at some Ethereum narratives that people are trying to spread, some crap they're trying to spread, just go on ETHUB. We don't, like, everything on ETHUB is factually correct with references. So if you are unsure about something, go on ETHUB, or even just tweet at us and tag us in the thread, and we'll come in like the white knights that we are and defend the great honor of Ethereum.
Yeah, I mean, that's why we created ETHUB, right? Like, you and I are sitting around, and, you know, it was almost like Ethereum was one kid on the playground being surrounded by 200 kids kicking and pounding at him and beating him up. And we were kind of like, you know, there's so much BS being spread, let's kind of stand up for him and create this site that helps actually spread facts, right? So, you know, it's always a nice little fun battle online. I enjoy it, kind of going back and forth with people that are naysayers, but at the end of the day, it's all in good fun. And that's why we created ETHUB. So, you know, I want it to continue to be a place where people can go. And I think it's important to control the narrative if you can do it with facts. And that's what I hope we always set out to do.
Yeah, exactly. It's a fun fact that ETHUB was actually like the very first concept of it was, I think you came up with it and you were like, hey, there's all this crap that gets spread on Twitter, all these, like, seriously, the same stuff over and over again. Let's just create a website where we go through them and tear them apart one by one. And then, of course, ETHUB became a lot more than that. But it's just funny how ETHUB started, and then we're still kind of in that space where we've got to defend the same, you know, old tired narratives that might pop up their head every now and again. Cool. So the next thing I wanted to talk about was a dev update from Rocket Pool. Now, Rocket Pool is kind of this decentralized staking network for Ethereum. They've been around for quite a while, but obviously they can't really do anything on a live network until we have a live network. So the Beacon Chain is going live soon, and they're ramping up their development updates. So this week they went through version 2 of their beta. They showed some screenshots in the post. You can find the post in the newsletter. And they also announced that they've got a Beacon Chain simulator ready to go. So what this does is I'm pretty sure you can download it now. If not, you will be able to soon. It uses the current ETH 2.0 depositor smart contract. It simulates that. It features validators who can deposit into this contract. It features the validate proposals, the attestation messaging, and all the good stuff that's coming with ETH 2.0. You know, it doesn't feature the consensus mechanism, obviously, because it's completely centralized and run as a simulation. But it's good to see them coming out with some more updates now that we're getting very close to testnet launch of the Beacon Chain clients. Because I do think that Rocket Pool is going to be very important if they can solve this, you know, decentralized staking through kind of a centralized platform. Because the platform itself is meant to act as a way to so that people don't pool, you know, all in one centralized place. Because there's a lot of we know there's a lot of I guess they're calling it generalized mining or mining 2.0 services coming out where they say, hey, you know, send us your tokens or delegate us your tokens and we'll stake for you and we'll take a little cut of it. But of course that's centralized and it just kind of goes back to pools and things like that, you know, mining pools or staking pools or whatever. So Rocket Pool's trying to do it in a decentralized way and they have their own token, of course, that's going to incentivize people to act, you know, honestly and get rewarded in the token, whatever. So it's a very interesting project to keep an eye on. Many people might not know about it. They're actually, their founders was based in Sydney. I don't know if he's still in Australia, but it's cool that it's kind of homegrown for me. So I've been following it quite closely over the past couple of years, or I think it's been a while since they've been around. But yeah, it's good to see them ramping up now that the Beacon Chain is finally going to testnet.
Yeah, that's a cool project. I mean, when I first heard of staking pools, my biggest concern was centralizing all those funds, right? So you don't want, you know, say 10 million Ether all centralized at one place, right? It's a lot different than mining power because mining power, you can just hook in and, you know, you're sitting on those GPUs or ASICs or whatever they are at home by yourself and you're just hooking into this larger pool. That's a lot different if you're using Ether, because you can't just, you don't want to send all this to one person because then you don't have the keys for those Ether anymore. So it's cool that they're working on a decentralized solution to this. I'll be very interested to see how this grows because there's a lot still unknown about the rewards too. In my opinion, they're a little bit too low right now. If we get to like that 10 million stake number or so, I think we're just around like 2.8 or 3%. To me, if you have less than 32 Ether, it's debatable. Definitely around these prices, if it's even worth it to use that capital to stake, because really you're not going to be making that much money over a course of a year, right? And if you have 32 or more, would you rather just do it yourself and not take the code risk of locking it into something like Rocket Pool? And if you have, say, you know, whatever, 32,000 Ether and you need to run thousands of validators, are you going to look for some kind of like larger infrastructure solution, right? So I'll be really interested to see what the market fit for Rocket Pool is. I think they have a really cool product and they seem really into it. And it's cool they already have the simulator up and they seem ahead of the game. So I hope they get good business, but I'll just be very interested to see how the market reacts to staking in general.
Yeah, exactly. Because staking is quite different to mining. On a number of fronts, it'll take a while to go through, you know, all the reasons why. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see if Rocket Pool takes off or if it gets any sort of, you know, real traction. It of course depends on how much ETH people have to stake. As you said, 32 ETH, just having one validator, maybe it's not worth it depending on your operational costs, because staking isn't just putting up 32 ETH and that's it. You forget about it. You've actually got, you know, operational costs of having to run the PC still and having to keep it on, your electricity costs and opportunity costs for locking up your ETH. There's all sorts of costs involved. So it'd be interesting to see if Rocket Pool takes off and if it adds another cost in there potentially, even if it's a small one, or it actually makes people money because the RPL token is in demand. And by staking your ETH, you also get RPL as well as ETH. So it'd be interesting to see if that plays out. Cool, cool. So the next thing I want to talk about was something that kind of took Twitter by storm this week. And I'm not talking about the Lightning Torch and Jack and Starkness from Lightning Labs and everything. I'm talking about the Ethereum-based one called TCR Party. So TCRs, for those who don't know, is called Token Curated Registries. The basic concept of this is curating a kind of registry or a list or a set of data about a particular, you know, topic, subject, whatever, but using token economics or, you know, game theory, kind of different types of incentives to make sure that the list is correct and that doesn't have any crap in there. So say you're creating a list of top 10 countries by population in the world, and you want to do that in a decentralized way, and you want to motivate people not to put up the wrong countries. TCRs basically work where a user would stake their tokens and be like, okay, China, I think it's China has the most, has the largest population in the world, so they should be number one. And if that's actually incorrect and enough people vote against them and challenge their assertion that it's number one, they'll actually lose part or all of their staked tokens. So TCRs are really, really immature. They have not been tried at scale at all. And what this TCR party is actually for is just for creating a list of the best Twitter kind of thought leaders, if you will. And this is on testnet at the moment. It's actually been a pretty cool experiment to see play out. But at the same time, because it's so small, it's just people trolling each other. Like, you can challenge anyone. And because the testnet tokens have no value, it doesn't even matter if you lose them. So no one cares. People are voting in people that are just completely irrelevant to crypto. People are kicking people that they don't like out of the protocol just because they don't agree with their views, not because they don't provide value within the crypto ecosystem. So it's a good kind of like fun little experiment to get people talking about TCRs, but I don't think it's anything serious yet. And I don't think it will be unless the tokens actually had monetary value behind them.
Yeah, I mean, this was a fun experiment. I was kind of confused by it at first. And to be honest, the rules and kind of everything that you can do is still a little bit, I feel like every day they add more to the site about what you can actually do. So that's helping. But like kind of how you kick people and you can stake your vote to keep them or vote to keep them or vote to kick them off. And if you win, you gain those tokens back plus more. There's a lot of rules here. Yeah, I mean, it's been a fun experiment. To be honest, I've kind of got burnt out on the whole like, it feels like people are just kicking people left and right because you don't really, well, to your point, the tokens don't really have much value because they're on the testnet. And then you also, to me, it's like you should be rewarded the longer you're on the list. So like if you've voted onto the list and you're there for say a week, from what I understand, it's as easy to kick you off the list then as it is someone that just came on. So to me, that's one of the things of TCRs maybe we should explore a little bit is, you know, if you're on that list longer, it should be harder to kick you off. But anyways, it's been fun. And basically, if you're on it, which I'm on it now, and I believe you are as well, Anthony, unless you've been recently kicked and are under voting. I don't know. I can't keep up with, I'm constantly like being kicked off and under voting. But if you're on it and you tweet, the bot will retweet you. So basically people can kind of follow that TCR party bot. And the idea would be that's kind of the ultimate curation of crypto tweets.
Yeah, I think I'm still on it because my tweets keep getting retweeted by that bot, which I thought was a really cool idea because it does distill kind of Twitter down into the people that you, I mean, not to Twitter on horns, but the people that you should be following because they provide the most value. So I do see something like a TCR for Twitter thought leaders working, but it needs to have a lot more mechanisms in place. As you said, there needs to be a system where the longer that you're on the list, the harder it is to kick you off the list. And, you know, maybe you need a larger number of tokens from a larger number of people to kick you off it. Because it doesn't make sense that someone, even if they, you know, if they've been on there for a year, obviously no one has wanted to kick them for a year, but then someone's like trolling. It's like, oh, I'm going to kick this person. He doesn't belong on there, whatever. And it kicks you and then you have to be re-voted back in or something like that. We do have a TCR section on ETHUB. It's not very detailed at the moment. I'm not sure. It might not even still be there after all the redesigns, because we wanted to revisit it. But if it is, definitely go check it out. There are links to resources there as well. But TCRs are definitely very immature. The only projects that have them live on mainnet, I think, is ADEX Network and Foam. So Foam Protocol is actually probably the one that I'd recommend go checking out, because they're basically they're trying to do decentralized location. So I guess the easiest analogy is called decentralized GPS, where people use TCRs to curate lists of locations and things like that. And you can stake against people and challenge them and everything. So it's probably the best example of a TCR in the wild with a token that actually has value. And you can go on there on the map and do all sorts of things as long as you have Foam tokens. So I thought that was really cool. But other than that, they're very small. I think that projects like this, I mean, we call them moonshot projects sometimes, or maybe projects that are better suited to a more mature ecosystem, because they're as I said, moonshot. They're harder to get right. They're harder to get going. You need all that infrastructure in place before you can start doing things. And we've seen this play out in other areas, of course, with Ethereum becoming a DeFi platform, because at the moment we can't have those Web3 use cases, such as a decentralized social network or something, because it's too expensive and the layer two solutions aren't there. So at the end of the day, I think it all comes down to just the infrastructure not being there yet. But it's still fun to see something like TCR Party be experimented with in such a public way, because it's on Twitter. So I hope that more of these experiments start happening in a public way. You know, we've had Burner Wallet as well, which is another one, because it's just very easy to get people to talk about. Like, I've seen, you know, people that don't really talk about Ethereum start talking about TCR Party, and just even if they're ratting on it, it doesn't matter. They're talking about it. They might go look up TCRs. Other people might go look up what TCRs are, and then we might actually see more implementations happening. So it's always good to see these things being talked about in general. So I thought that was really cool to see this week anyway.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a fun little game, right? That people, it's kind of the classic UX of, you actually don't really know until the bot messages you the transaction ID that you're transacting on the Ethereum network. So it's kind of a classic example of user experience that we need to get to, that people should be using this game. The user could have no idea that it's happening on Ethereum, but Ethereum's enabling it to happen, and that's great, right? You don't always need to know that's happening, at least for mass adoption. And just one note, the TCR pages are still on ETHUB, so if people want to go check them out, the reason I know that is because when we were transferring the site over earlier this week, or earlier last week to the new design, there's a lot of images on the TCR page, which I'm actually not sure who drew those. Maybe they were Chaz. They look like they were drawn in an iPad Pro, but they're pretty solid pages. They explain all the different types of TCRs.
Cool. So enough on TCRs, I think, for now. Just a couple of points with the on-chain activity this week. Uniswap was having an absolutely killer week with maker volume. They broke so many records. Like, I think it broke most volume traded on Uniswap for the day. Maker was trading, I think, at one point $500,000 of 24-hour volume on the platform, the MKR token. And this is obviously because the Oasis DEX was shut down at the beginning of this month, I think, and people are migrating towards other platforms to trade the MKR token. Of course, the Oasis DEX was forked out as well, so there's the fork Oasis DEX. But we're seeing MKR traded on Uniswap a lot more, I think, because it's just a different platform. People can obviously supply MKR as liquidity and earn fees and things like that. So it was really interesting to see, you know, it's spiking up basically, and seeing all the cheering that was going on. And you know, what also popped out of this was that Hayden, the guy behind Uniswap, said that he kind of started this as like just a fun project. It was literally him, and he implemented an idea that Vitalik spoke about like 3 years ago. And it's just insane how he basically only got a $100,000 grant from the EF, and he was able to replace Bancor, which raised $150 million in an ICO, with Uniswap. Yeah, the volume isn't there yet, but Uniswap's like, you know, one or two, I think there's two people working on it now or something like that. And, you know, Mike from Balance is their so-called hype man who just, you know, not markets, but talks about Uniswap a lot on Twitter. That's it. Whereas you had Bancor who raised all this money, you know, and then they just moved to EOS for some reason and the whole team just migrated there, whatever. But it just goes to show that, as you were saying before, right, you raised $100 million. What's the motivation to build your platform? You're not constrained. You can do whatever. You go on your private jet, fly around the world. Who cares? You don't have any worries. Raise, you know, get maybe a grant after you've built the platform. And it's only 100K, right? That'll probably give you, depending on what they leave, that doesn't give them more than a couple of years max runway, you know, after factoring in all a person's living expenses. So when you're constrained like that, you obviously will work harder and try to make something more successful and work for the right reasons, rather than having all this money and being like, oh, I can do it whenever I want, sort of thing.
Absolutely. I mean, and also two very key points here is, I think Uniswap's taking off, and one reason I love it is they don't have a token. There's no unnecessary token. There's no unnecessary friction. You just go on there and you buy or sell or supply liquidity for whatever tokens you want, and that's it. And then the other thing is, we talk about a lot, is on decentralized exchanges, there's a big liquidity problem. I think Uniswap perfectly incentivizes liquidity. If you want to be a whale, you can supply, say, Maker token, and you put in Maker, you put in ETH. They have to be equal to each other on both sides. And then you share with the pool 0.3% of every trade. So if you have a lot of liquidity you're doing nothing with, they're very properly incentivizing that. So again, to your point about Bancor, which I guess they've switched to EOS now, and I wouldn't trust any volume on EOS. I don't believe it at all. I think it's all pretty much fake. But you know, they've, in my mind, replaced Bancor, and the product's better, right? Because there's no token and they're incentivizing liquidity pretty solidly. So there's a lot of cool stuff happening here with the Oasis DEX going down, which obviously we talked about. We thought someone would spin it up in a decentralized manner. That looked like that's happening. I think I saw that a couple days ago. I had some trouble accessing it, but it seems like it's starting to take off. So we'll see if they kind of swallow back some of the Maker liquidity, but Uniswap has good momentum right now. There's a really cool site called uniswap.info. I actually prefer beta.uniswap.info. It's their new design. But they can kind of, you can dive into each market and see how much is supplied. And if you're a liquidity provider, you can see exactly how much liquidity you're taking in and all that good stuff. And hopefully ETHTRADER comes to its senses soon and re-enables donut transfers, because I want to get back in that donut trading game on Uniswap.
Yeah, exactly. It's good that you bring up the points of incentivizing liquidity, because we've seen that DEX is definitely struggling with liquidity. You know, 0x announcing a market maker program to try and get the liquidity up. And I don't think it actually just applies to DEXs. I think it's across the board, especially during a bear market. Across the board, a lot of these DeFi apps are struggling with it. But if we can solve it in a bear market, then we'll have no problems in a bull market, basically. So on the Maker front, there's another thing that happened this week for Maker, which was pretty awesome. DAI supply reached an all-time high of 77 million DAI issued, which was awesome, because you kind of Maker risk team through the decentralized governance process of has been trying to incentivize the creation of more DAI. You know, we saw the stability fee drop down to 0.5% so that people would be encouraged to mint more DAI. And now we've seen it actually this week tick back up to 1%. Because it worked to get more DAI in circulation, because that ceiling is still at 100 million DAI issued. So that's the max currently. And of course, Maker token holders can vote that up when the time comes. And it looks like we might get there in the next, you know, maybe month or so or something like that. It really depends. Maker's, you know, still a very interesting system like that, because there is an argument to be made that the Maker system, the demand actually comes from demand for CDPs, so demand for a loan rather than demand for the stablecoin itself. And we've obviously seen this play out with the huge over collateralization of the entire system. It fluctuates between 350 and 400%. So yeah, that basically means for every dollar of DAI, there's $3.50 to $4 of Ether backing it up, which you know, is cool to see, because we want that to happen. We don't want the system to be anywhere near under collateralized, because then it might trigger global settlement or printing of more MKR tokens, which would dilute the Maker token holders. So it's good to see that the system's working as intended.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Maker's crushing it, right? There's not much more to say. And obviously, CDPs have become the go-to product on Ethereum. And I believe we have over 2 million locked in. I know we have 2 million locked in wrapped ETH now, which to me is kind of the indicator of the success of open finance. Yeah, it's just really cool to see it. It seems like a lot of people are kind of using CDPs now for other use cases, like just lock a little ETH in there. They don't want to sell it. Maybe I've seen people pulling it out to put in grants or to mess on the XDAI burner wallet. So just a lot of cool stuff happening. And I have to say, CDP 3228, which is now infamous and definitely infamous on Into the Ether, mainly because of your tracking of him back in the day, or him or her, I guess. I'm convinced there's some kind of market maker or market manipulator, because they keep coming within $1. I know they got bit once a little bit by like a few cents, but they were down, I think they were right around $98 the other day, and the market bottomed at like 100.15 and then pumped $20. So I don't know, something's going on with CDP 3228.
Yeah, I think I made 3228 famous through all my Twitter threads. Unfortunate for them, I guess. But at the end of the day, it's all public information. But yeah, it's just funny seeing that the risk that they take. I don't understand it. I don't know why they keep trying to take such big risks. But as you said, it might be some kind of manipulation, which, you know, it'd be quite hard to do something like that, considering that there's 14 different price oracles that are pointing at different kind of exchange APIs for price feeds and different other, you know, other price feeds that are being aggregated as well. So I don't know. Well, I'll keep my eye out for 3228. Maybe I should put together another tweet thread about his, you know, what he's been up to lately, and see what people think as well. Cool. So we spoke about this a little bit earlier about the Ethereum leadership and how Danny Ryan put out a really good tweet storm about who's leading, you know, Ethereum 2.0. So as I mentioned, there's three key people, Danny Ryan, Justin Drake, and Xiao Wang. And of course, Vitalik could be considered a fourth person, but he doesn't really do project management or kind of management at all. He spends most of his time doing research, of course, and acts as that kind of, you know, maybe figurehead's the wrong word, but he definitely is. Like, I'm not shy to say that he's a figurehead in Ethereum that people look to for guidance on certain things, because, you know, the roadmap is following what was originally laid out from the beginning by Vitalik and the small team at the beginning. So, yeah, so Danny Ryan basically just went through and gave a shout out to each of these team members. And what I found really awesome was he also gave a shout out to both the ETH 2.0 teams, like the people implementing ETH 2.0, and ETHUB and Gitcoin and Moloch DAO. And it's just awesome seeing like ETHUB alongside those other awesome teams and to see that we're, you know, providing the value that is needed in this space, and that people like Danny Ryan, who are very integrated within the Ethereum ecosystem, and, you know, he works for the Ethereum Foundation, but it's really good to see them calling out the work we've been doing, because at the end of the day, we're doing it for the, you know, the greater good of the community. We want to see ETH 2.0 delivered as much as anyone. We want to make it easy for people to understand it as well. So it was just great to see that kind of recognition come through from someone that we both really respect.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've talked a little bit, but we can't be more grateful for the nice response we've got from the community. And it's always great to see. I mean, we've talked before, you and I have day jobs. We do this at night and in our spare time, we're making no money off of it. So it's nice to get some appreciation. I know a lot of people out there really kind of have been using ETHUB and are thankful for the stuff that all our contributors have put together to this point. So definitely cool to see Danny shout us out in that thread. I talked to Danny a decent amount sometimes on Twitter if I have questions, or Discord, or wherever he might be. He's a very in-demand guy, but he's always there to answer questions that I have around ETH 2.0, and I know he's really appreciative of the stuff we're doing. So it's kind of cool, like, we see all these different people have a lot of different specialties, right, of what they're good at. And I feel like we're kind of building these teams out and projects out, or these DAOs out, or whatever it might be that he was talking about in his tweet thread. And they're all kind of meshing together, and everyone's kind of finding their niche, and it's starting to work out pretty well. And I think all these people that are kind of becoming leaders on the ETH 2.0 teams, and anybody on these teams, I mean, I'm super impressed with basically anybody I've run into that's involved in ETH 2.0 and the research and the building out of it. So, you know, I have not been shy about my bullishness for the future. That's for sure.
Yeah. And it was really good to see that the light was shone on these kind of people as well, because I think a lot of people don't realize who is actually kind of behind the curtains, because these guys are really, really, really busy doing important work. They don't spend every day on Twitter like we do, of course, fighting the trolls. They're actually doing the important work to get ETH 2.0 or, you know, any kind of Ethereum-related stuff out there in the wild. So definitely good to see Danny kind of formalize that in the thread. The tweet thread's, of course, linked in the newsletter, so go check it out if you haven't yet. All right, so thanks everyone for joining us again for the recap. That's all for this week. If you haven't yet, go subscribe to the newsletter. So, you know, ethub.substack.com. You're obviously listening to the podcast, but don't forget to subscribe to that as well, podcast.ethub.io. So we'll see you next week, guys.
Thanks for listening to the Into the Ether podcast. You can subscribe to us at podcast.ethub.io, as well as follow us on Twitter at econoar and at zazzle0x.